are you?
I'm all right, yeah, thank you. Very well.
Obviously, Joy Division, New Order, and new stuff all the time. You've had a huge career through the 80s. Now, I was born in 83, so I've seen the 80s, the 90s, the noughties. How difficult was it to break into music when you started?
Funnily enough, because we started in punk, it wasn't difficult. Because punk was a real revolution, and what happened was that a lot of like-minded people came together, and we were playing in squats, in people's houses, so we were never short, really, of being together. So we were able to express ourselves, which I must say sounded like shite. When I listen back to it now, I'm amazed. But, you know, the thing is that you were able to express yourself. It was a revolution. And luckily for us, as musicians, we were self-taught. We had no lessons. We were just aping punks, Sex Pistols mainly. And we progressed. And as Joy Division, we progressed very quickly.
Yeah.
And literally, from when we started, which sounded like a load of drums falling downstairs, 6 months later, we were actually writing very passable and very good music, it has to be said. 6 months after that, we were, you know, music that belied our age, because I didn't start playing until I was 21. And a lot of Unknown Pleasures was written by us all at 21.
Which is quite late, isn't it? Because a lot of people that we've heard
they start. Well, yeah, I mean, it amazed me when Johnny Marr said he started at 7. And I was like, oh, Jesus. You know, being a musician is a 24-hour job, it kills you. And, you know, the thing is that I was actually glad to get 21 years where I got weekends off.
Yeah. And you could
and the nights were my own. Yeah, you know, instead of, you know, once you're self-employed, it becomes so different and quite actual difficult to, the lows and highs of it really, really get to you. So from 21, I became obsessed with the group and with music. And of course, when our singer sadly took his own life, we were only 23. We'd been professional for 3 months as Joy Division, and we were literally just on the first rung of a, you know, a wide open ladder, and we were just about to go to America on tour. We were really hot, the LP was doing really well, and then it just crashed and we had to start again. But luckily, the three of us actually clicked musically really well into New Order, and, you know, amazingly, we did it again. So I've been a professional musician since 1977. So, yeah, I mean...
It's a hell of a career, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's Max Bygraves' territory, isn't it? It's Bruce Forsyth, man. And I never thought, you know, it's been weird. It's, you know, you get to the age that we're at, and I think I can safely say that even though we don't get on anymore with the rest of the New Order, all of us have actually played more in our 50s and 60s than we ever did in our 30s and 40s.
It's unbelievable.
That's weird. Yeah, yeah, it's really weird, because with most groups, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
They earn all their money, 30 to 40, and then
play
relax.
It later on. Yeah.
We've had to fucking put up with the hacienda. And all the problems that we had, you know, throughout our career in that point. And then when we got to the bit where we should be relaxing, we're all working harder than ever. It's actually quite...
You're supposed to retire when you get older, aren't you? Relax.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're lucky at the moment. The weird thing is that when you get to when you get older, you just don't feel it. You know, I don't feel 65. I feel
I'm still 21 in your head.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
And am I right in saying, Peter, that one of your biggest influences on your career was the Sex Pistols?
Yep.
And I've read somewhere, and please tell me if I'm wrong, that you borrowed 35 quid off your mum to buy a bass guitar in the shop and look to use those, as if to say, another one that's been to a gig.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is, when I went in to buy the bass guitar, I didn't actually know what a bass guitar was.
You just heard about...
No, Barney told me to get a bass guitar.
Yeah.
Our guitarist said, get a bass guitar. And we'll be ready, we'll be off.
You could have walked out with anything.
And I just thought, I didn't want to appear ignorant. So it's a good thing I didn't say the triangle, wasn't it? And when I went into the shop, and the guy, I said to him, I want a bass guitar. Yeah. And he said, well, which bass guitar do you want? You know, beckoning a hand across a vast array of guitars. And I went, a bass guitar. And then he gave me one, and I went, oh, that one's only got four strings, and my mate's just got six. And he went, it's because it's a bass guitar, you numpty. And I was like, oh. So it wasn't a great start. But believe you me, when I you know, sat on the bus home, clutching that guitar back to Little Alton, it was a very special moment. And then when I got in our house, proud as punch, and my dad said to me, what the fucking hell are you going to do with that, you dickhead? And I was like, oh. But yeah, I found something to do with it, and yeah, we did very well, threw ourselves into it. And as I say, there was a lot of like-minded people in Manchester at that time. The ranch was about the only place that we could actually come together, Fufu Lamar's place, to socialise. Everything else was done at gigs. The reason we opened the Hacienda was because people like us had nowhere to go. So we opened it so all the misfits could be together, which worked very well, actually. Yeah.
Fantastic. And obviously, for me, the big song that I remember you doing was when you were obviously part of New Order, was World in Motion. The 1990s England, it was Football Italia. It's one of the, as a sports presenter, it's one of the earliest World Cups. I think I was seven, but it's one of the earliest ones I remember. What was it like at the time actually doing that and knowing that England were going to use it globally?
Well,
I imagine it was hard work.
No, it wasn't that hard work. I mean, it was, we were still very indie and very uncooperative with any kind of commercialisation of our music. We were still acting quite punky. The record company was exactly the same. They encouraged us to be different. And the weird thing was that when we got offered the World Cup song, it happened because Tony Wilson was at an FA do. And he was with the head of PR from the FA. And the guy was saying, he said, I love your record label. He said, your bands are amazing. He said, I have to sit through the World Cup song every 4 years and it's terrible. It does my head in. I wish one of your groups could do it. And he said, well, which is your favourite group? And the guy, the PR guy at the FA said, New Order. He went, well, let's ask him. And that was
it. That's how it's
all. He asked us. And we, perversely, just went, yeah, that'd be weird, wouldn't it? You know, you never know, you might get the Eurovision Song Contest after that. You never know what's next, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, we weren't getting on very well at the time. And the record actually brought us together, it has to be said. And Keith Allen, drafting Keith Allen in because we felt we needed a maniac to lead us. You know, a mad football fan, because we were football fans but not mad football fans.
So
and we thought getting
extra.
Him in. Yeah, he came in like a whirlwind, man. He's like a Tasmanian devil.
Yeah.
It's, you know, what a character. Nutter. Absolute nutter. And he came in and he made it easy. And his enthusiasm actually helped New Order, because New Order were really lacking enthusiasm. So at the time, it worked perfectly. We did it. It was a great song. And the interesting thing about the song was, when we wrote it, we knew that if it didn't have a connotation to football, it'd be a great song anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
So you could have released it either way.
It was Love's Got the World in Motion.
Yeah.
It was, and it just fitted wonderfully with the sentiment. Doing the rap was Keith Allen's idea. A rap in the middle.
What was it like work? Because I'm a Liverpool fan, so John Barnes to me is one of these icons of football. What was it like to see a footballer rap on your music?
Yeah, well, do you know what? John Barnes wasn't the first choice.
Was he not?
No. Paul Gascoigne had a go.
I bet
Peter Beardsley had a go. Somebody else had a go. And it was, yeah, I mean, we were laughing our socks off, to say the least. And then John Barnes sort of stepped into the breach. He had an Australian friend with him who helped him write the second half of the lyrics, who did a great job, actually, an Australian footballer that was travelling with him. I mean, you know, in all honesty, not to burst too many people's bubbles, there weren't that many of the bloody England team there.
No.
And John Barnes was really pissed off, because he when it came out and it was really well received and it went to number one, our first and only number one record, he said all the bloody team said they were on it, and it really annoyed him,
because he was the one.
Because he was the one. Yeah, there was only about three or four of them there, and then all of a sudden, all of them were there. Oh yeah, I was there, and all this line. He got really pissed off with them all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it did. It was great, and you know, seeing it this time with the Euros and seeing England do as well as they did was fantastic.
Yeah, it's
and,
great.
My God, we've tried to get John Barnes to do it with us. So many times, and he's always been busy. He's so busy.
One day.
Yeah, well, one day we will. I mean, I'd play it.
but my son won't play it because they lost.
Ah, right.
So I said, come on, it'll really get them going, you know.
Well, it's like the Sweet Carolines and songs that we've heard.
Yeah,
we're playing them all the way up to the final, and then when you get beat in the final, everybody's like, oh, I can't listen to it. It's
I know, and that's what he's like, because he's a mad football fan, you see.
Yeah.
Whereas I just play it because I know the crowd would love it.
Absolutely. And just two final questions for you, Peter. Am I right in saying, is this your second show of the day, or you've got another one? Is it Shrewsbury and Mac?
No, we did. We played yesterday.
Played yesterday.
Yeah, we did two last weekend. Did a charity show at the Ritz last weekend. Did two the weekend before. We're actually doing quite well coming back. It's been good.
What's it like after obviously everything we've gone through, getting back out in front of live? Is every time just amazing?
No, I mean, do you know what? I mean, it's been debilitating for so many people. I've lost close people.
Yeah.
And it's been absolutely awful. But when we walked out, we were all quite worried about how it would be and how it would feel, and lo and behold, if you know, humans aren't that resilient that they can just snap back, and everybody has just snapped back. It's like it didn't happen, which in a weird way makes it seem all the stranger. Yeah. You're like going, what? Everyone's, look at this, look around you, you know. Yeah. Probably about one of the only ones who's not hugging and running around kissing everybody is me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else has just gone back to normal, and yeah, it's been really, really odd because of the way it's affected everybody to see how quick we can go back. Everybody wants to go back, and it's been nice. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. Occasionally I remember,
yeah.
And I have to be careful.
Just finally, Peter, what's next for you then? What's next for you?
What's next for me? I've got another 8 festivals. I've got the Joy Division Classical coming up. I've got the Hacienda Classical coming up. I'm doing loads of new material. I've got loads of sessions. I'm very, very happily busy. And yeah, everything's good, yeah.
Keep up the good work, mate.
Yeah, I can hardly find time to work out.
B-Talk, thanks ever so much for joining us.
You're welcome,
at Rewind.